Hi, everybody, and welcome to our podcast for this week. This week, I'm interviewing somebody who actually works for William Blue. Anthony Mitri is our head of academic studies for hospitality for vocational and higher ed programs. Anthony is also a partner in Shepherd's Bakehouse. So, welcome, Anthony.
Thanks for having me.
Anthony, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your journey?
All right. Well, I mean, I guess my journey is probably similar to a lot of people's journeys in hospitality. Finished high school and went straight into uni, studied hospitality and thought, you know, this is where I want to be. This is what I want to do. I want to be the general manager within 5 years. And I thought, you know, by getting a degree, I'm going to walk into a hotel and get all that. That didn't work. I pretty much started working in hotels as while I was at uni. It was convenient because the hours that a hotel is open are quite flexible to working in uni. So if I'm at uni during the day, I could be working in the hotel at night or even in the evenings. Started off as a night porter. Moved on to a team leader in the concierge department, and then was lucky enough to be awarded a traineeship with IHG at the time, and that corporate traineeship was all about working in every department in the hotel, managing every department in the hotel, and then finally choosing the department that I wanted to work in. And I focused on front office. I can't cook. Hated working in the kitchens. Didn't like making beds in housekeeping. Finance was just way beyond my realm. Didn't really like the HR side of things. Sales and marketing was great, but I can't lie to people, so I'm not really good at sales. I chose front office because it was customer facing. It was front facing, and I quite liked that aspect of hospitality. It's what originally drew me there. From there, I finished my 18-month traineeship and got pulled into the general manager's office and, you know, got the whole congratulations, you finished your traineeship, what do you want to do next? And it was at that point that I actually handed in my resignation. It was at that point. And the GM, that was a similar reaction to the GM with a lot more expletives. But the reason why I wanted to get out of hospitality, I mean, most of us who are in hospitality want to get out of it because of the shift work. It's not fun working at night and working weekends when your friends are, you know, working 9 to 5 Monday to Friday.
But you work everybody else's free time.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I took it as an opportunity to get out. I mean, I was only 21 at the time, but the biggest driver behind it was that my brother and I and another partner had been talking about going into business together. And, you know, the biggest challenge for anyone growing up in Australia or going through the Australian education system is no one actually teaches you how to go into business. It's all really around
what to do once you're there.
Yeah, exactly. Finish school, go to uni, get a job, and then work for the rest of your life and die. But the reality is,
teach that at William Blue.
Yeah, no, actually we don't. But that's the school system. So it was very much conditioned that way. And you know, both my parents were self-employed, and it was kind of, you know, within our genetic makeup to, you know, not really just be bogged down with employment. So we kind of started talking about this idea. And mind you, this was back in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, we started to look at what opportunities there were in the marketplace. And one of the biggest ones we saw was in health and wellness. You know, people were starting to talk about living healthier lifestyles. People were starting to think about what kinds of foods they were putting in their mouths. This was way before, you know, the paleo movements, way before Atkins, where people were kind of slowly starting to think about, you know, what should we be eating healthy? Are we facing a problem in Australia where, you know, obesity is going to become a problem? But no one was actually doing anything about it at the time. So, you know, I come from a Lebanese background, and one of the other partners who was involved was from a Greek background. And it was, food was our life. And we never grew up talking about organic food because organic food was just regular food, you know.
That was the food from the garden.
Yeah, exactly. You know, mum and dad grew their own fruit and veg. Occasionally we'd have, you know, some pet chickens that would disappear. I remember having a pet goat once that disappeared. You know, but that's what we were always fed, good, healthy, quality, you know, food. And we thought, you know, is there a way we can replicate this and tap into a market that really is looking for that at that time? Mm. So we started to think about all the different ways we can do it. And you know, baked goods and bakery products was something we landed on. So we came up with this amazing idea of setting up an artisan bakery that was making, you know, quality breads from organic inputs, that was, you know, low food miles, and sourcing all our inputs from local producers and really, you know, feeding the market some quality stuff, you know, not thinking about these. And there's a place for this, you know, your little Vietnamese bakeries that where the bread is just full of sugar, or the stuff you get from the supermarket, which is mass produced. This is real artisan, handmade type stuff.
And I guess you preempted the trend now of people wanting to know where their food's coming from and how it's made. People are really keen to know where their ingredients are coming from.
Absolutely. And look, one of the other big things that came out of our ideas and our concept was we had some family members at the time that were gluten intolerant. And one of the hardest things for them at the time, I mean, it's pretty hard now to get good quality gluten-free stuff, but you can imagine what it was like 15 years ago. Gluten-free bread you'd get from the supermarket was a brick. It still is a brick. But we thought, you know, what is there a way that we can do this and make it tasty and make it, you know, a little bit more user-friendly? So kind of taking all those ideas and all those areas in the marketplace and putting it all together, we came up with the concept, and it was at that stage that all three of us that were involved quit our jobs, hence the me quitting my traineeship.
What was the push? What made you go, I'm going to do this, I'm going to quit my job? Because that's a big jump.
It is. Look, it was having something to hang your hat on, you know. What legacy are you leaving behind? You know, everyone wants to leave something behind to say, you know, when you're 80 and 90, you kind of look back at your life and think, that's something I'm proud of. That's something I can hang my hat on and say, you know, we did an amazing thing there and we really influenced the way that, you know, people behave. So that really was what was inspiring. Obviously, money was a big one as well, you know, earning capacity. I won't lie from that, you know. Working in hospitality, you know, 50, 60, 70 grand a year. My brother was a pretty senior finance person with Fairfax at the time, so his leap of faith was much bigger than mine. He quit a substantially high paying job, but unfortunately, with him starting a young family at the time, he was working till 8 and 9 o'clock at night, starting at 6 or 7 in the morning, and you know that wow. Lifestyle was although the finance and the money was good, the lifestyle was quite challenging.
Was wearing him down.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so we kind of all went into business thinking that, you know what, we're gonna have it easy going into business.
So how hard could it be?
No, absolutely. Absolutely blind going into it. And there was a lot of reality checks throughout the time, yeah.
What were the biggest reality checks?
Look, the biggest one that sticks in my mind was the fact that we found a place to set up our business, and we kind of all sat around the room thinking that, you know, we had this huge product list of all the things that we were going to do, and at that point we all kind of looked at each other and thought, I thought you knew how to bake, no, I thought you knew how to bake, no, I thought, so yeah, it was, that was probably the biggest reality, was the fact that we had an idea and we had a concept and we'd invested a lot of money into setting it up, but we all forgot the one important part, which was who was actually going to take this idea and make it a reality. So we had to go out and look for a baker. The challenging part about that was we were broke. We'd invested all our money into the business, and everything that we had was in there. It was in stock in the shelves, and it was in rent, and it was in equipment that we'd bought and we'd leased. So we had to be a little bit, you know, think outside the square and go and source someone. So we found someone who was, you know, looked like what we wanted to get out of them, who had a certain skill set. But when we pitched the business to him, he loved it. But unfortunately, he said, you know, okay, how much can you guys pay me? And when we turned around and said, we can't pay you, we've got no money, he kind of looked at us and thought, why have you wasted the last 2 hours of my life taking me through this business plan? I get what you're going to do, but I've got a, you know, family, I've got a mortgage. How do you expect me not to work?
I can't live on goodwill.
No, you can't live on goodwill. And, you know, you can't live on bread alone.
you can certainly try.
So, look, we had to come up with a way that was going to get him in without, you know, having to pay him. So we said, we can't offer you anything financially right now, but what we can do is offer you 25% in the business. And that, at that point, he kind of stopped and went, that sounds a bit interesting. But again, 25% of nothing is nothing. So we then turned around and the sweetener was, we'll name the business after you.
Was that something you thought of beforehand, or it was kind of a...
No, it was just, on... It just happened. I think it was my brother who suggested it there and then, and we kind of stopped and went, wait, what are you talking about? But that was the real catalyst for us, because at that point he said, all right, I'll go away and talk to my wife and find out. And he was back the next morning, and yeah, you know, Shepherd's Bakehouse was born.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we conned him into it, and, you know, thank God we did.
So you've got Shepherd, you've got your Bakehouse, you've got somebody who can make bread, which is helpful.
Yep.
What are your biggest challenges? What are some of the ones that really stick out for you?
I guess the biggest challenges were, anyone going into business needs to have an expectation of what it's like. You don't make money straight away. And it was funny, you know, my brother being the finance person, you know, factored as much as he could into it. But at the end of the day, with the three of us never having run our, or four of us now, not having run our own business, we didn't really think that far ahead. So, yeah, getting used to not having much money to live on. And I suppose for myself it was easy. I was only young, and I didn't have really any commitments. You know, no girlfriend, no anything like that. Couldn't afford to have a girlfriend. but the other guys kind of families and kids and mortgages and stuff. So it was quite challenging. Being in such a high pressure environment where you're working, but there's not much coming back. You know, in a job, you work, you do your 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 hours, and you're guaranteed every week, every month, every fortnight, there's going to be a paycheck in your account. But when you're a small business owner, there's no guarantees. So it was really, really challenging. From a personal perspective, the challenge of working in such a high pressure environment and having the realities of business, of family to also deal with, three out of the four business partners ended up divorced.
Wow.
You know, that's the reality.
That's huge.
It was.
I guess
my brother was the only one that was unscathed. I don't know how he got through. He's got a really patient wife.
I guess the bakery stole your life for a bit.
It did, because the bakery or the business becomes your life. Everything is all-consuming. You live it, you breathe it, you feel it. You know, if it does well, you feel good. If it doesn't do well, you feel bad. It's like having a surrogate child.
And it's not like a normal job where you have the weekends off. No, because if you have the weekends off, then the work doesn't get done.
That's right. And that's something you need to understand with a business is that, or with this particular business model, is that if you're working, you're earning. And if you're not working, you're not earning.
Exactly.
So it's a big paradigm shift for someone to go from being an employee to a business owner. To kind of do that.
What didn't work? So
everything.
What were the big things that didn't work? I remember you speaking to me about product range.
Yeah. So when we first went into business, we kind of wanted to do everything. And when you're in business, every time someone says, "Can you do this?" or "Can you do that?" or "We've got a need for this," you say yes to so many things because you need the money and you need the income coming in. So eventually we had a product line of over 100 items.
Wow.
Yeah. And we were doing things from, you know, little desserts to tarts to cheesecakes to breads to rolls to burger rolls to dinner rolls to torpedo rolls to every different types of breads, different flavored breads. What we did is we moved away from our core business, and it got to a point where we were doing so much that there was no economies of scale.
And so did the quality start to suffer because you had such a wide range?
Yeah, look, the quality did drop a little bit, but what it just meant was that our costs just ballooned because we were doing so much.
And I guess you were just trying to fulfill every customer's needs. Yeah,
absolutely. The minute someone said, "Can you do this?" it was almost like, "Yes, we can," because we're so desperate for the money. and look, that went on for about 2 to 3 years, I'd say. The first few years of just finding your feet and working out where you were in the marketplace. I mean, financial management is something that you can learn in paper and you can learn in theory and you can do all that stuff, but when you're actually running your own business, it becomes a beast to itself.
Mm.
So we got to a point where the business was, you know, just we were spending so much and we weren't making enough money. I'll never forget the day that we were in the bakery and we saw the bank manager coming down the road. And we were so far behind our line of credit, it was just exhausted. We knew he was coming to serve us with some papers and shut us down.
Gosh.
So we shut the front door, turned the lights off and pretended there was no one there. And he knocked and knocked and knocked and he came around to the back door and he knocked and knocked and knocked and eventually he left. And it was like at that point, that was the biggest turning point for us. That was like, you know what, if we don't do something about the business now and turn it around, we're all going to lose our houses that we've invested and we're all going to lose this money that we've invested. We're all going to have to declare for bankruptcy and go back to our jobs of working in hotels or working as accountants. And it wasn't something we were prepared to do at the time.
Did you ever think, that's it, we need to stop? Did you ever think, that's it, this isn't working?
Yeah, a lot. You had those conversations regularly, not with the other partners, but, you know, that internal monologue you do, you think, why am I doing this? You know, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. I've got a university degree. I'm elbow deep in sourdough starter. What am I doing here? And you do get to the point where it's like, I can just quit now and go back and do a job and earn an income again. But the reality is that that's your old life and you didn't want that anymore. So you wanted something a little bit different. And it's just constantly reminding yourself of why you're here.
And it's worth the effort and it's worth the stress.
There is the light at the end of the tunnel and it's hard to see that light.
It's a long tunnel. On.
Yeah, and look, small businesses go, so many of them go bust in the first 12 months. And I see it regularly. And, you know, I say to our students here at William Blue is that if you don't believe me, go get the Yellow Pages from 5 years ago and just randomly start calling plumbers, electricians, cafes, restaurants, and see how many of them actually still exist.
Yeah.
And the reality is that hardly any of them are. So
I guess you look at the Rocks where we are, the number of times you walk down George Street and a storefront is suddenly empty.
Absolutely. It does. It happens, especially in hospitality. It's because hospitality businesses, the margins in them are so low, and the investment in food or in beverage or in inputs is quite high and wages are quite high. Sometimes
or your equipment.
Yeah, people don't understand the realities of what being a hospitality business is all about. So kind of all of that put together, it kind of just, you've got to just keep plugging along and just plugging at it until eventually things turn and there's points in your life that will eventually happen. You've just got to be able to stick it out.
So how did you decide what your core business was going to be?
We went back to our original business plan because that's kind of the business plan that inspired us to do what we wanted to do. And we knew that there was a gap in the market. And we moved away from that business model and we moved away from that from a necessity perspective. But we couldn't continue to tread water the way we were doing.
Yeah.
So we had to eventually go, you know what, we need to just draw a line through this. pick 10 items that we do and are quite successful and do them bloody well. And from there, start building on the reputation and the product. So we did. So we got rid of all the little things that we were supplying 20 units here and 30 units there, and drew the business back to its core business, you know, health and wellness, you know, organic, artisan made, and then eventually the business started to take a turn. We identified an opportunity to start selling our products through local farmers markets. That was quite successful for us, and that was
and a you're nice, still doing that now.
Still do that, and that was a nice little bit of cash flow into the business, which allowed us to do other things in such as product development and start to test the market on you know, new products and whatnot, and not so much new products that customers came to us and said, I need this. It was more about the opportunities that we identified in the market. So not looking at small, you know, local supplier that's going to buy 100 bread rolls off you a week. It was about identifying a, you know, a trend in the marketplace that, you know, you were going to sell 5,000 units of something a week. And that's where we eventually started to really turn the business and make a bit of money. The other challenge was getting our products out there, and we learned as a business that you can't do everything on your own. So we started off distributing our own products to local suppliers and to suppliers around Sydney, but Sydney's so big. I mean, we used to fill up the van and start delivering from Katoomba and end up at Bondi.
Wow.
You know, and that was...
And was that every day?
Every day.
Wow.
And we thought, you know what, we can't sustain that model, and it's not a model for growth.
And guys, if you're not from Sydney, Bondi, east near the water, where everybody knows it is, but Katoomba is Blue Mountains, and you're talking about easily, what, 2 hours between the two?
Yeah, you're about 2.5 hours. Then you've got, you know, traffic, and you've got stop, get out, drop off, get back in the van and get going. So
it's the kind of the extremes of Sydney.
Yeah, you're looking at, you know, between a 4 to 6 hour delivery run, and that's just, it's not sustainable.
No.
So we started to outsource that process. We outsourced the wholesale part of our business, and we leveraged the skills and the networks of you know, distributors who already had the customers. They just plugged our product into what they were selling for a small fee, but what it meant was that instead of, you know, doing it ourselves and having, you know, to spend money and time and effort in distributing, we were paying a nominal fee that was nowhere near what we were spending, but we were getting access to, you know, 100 times the customers that we did.
Cool. Originally
doing it ourselves.
Cool.
Mm.
Kind of turned everything around.
It did. We worked smarter, not harder. You know, it's
you started to be able to sleep at night.
Yeah, that was great. That was the best part of the business. When you, as a business owner, you kind of take a step back and you're seeing that things are happening on their own. You put in systems and procedures, and eventually what ends up happening is the business starts to morph into this self-sustainable thing. That eventually just, it runs itself.
Here's a question a bit left field. You were saying that it became your life.
Mm-hmm.
How do you stop that?
Can't. You absolutely can't. As a business owner, your business has to be your life. Everything you live and breathe has to be dedicated to the business. Because the minute you stop and the minute you take your eye off the ball is when you start going backwards.
Yeah.
Different people will have different takes on that. But for us, it was focus, focus, focus. That you've got to have a balance. There eventually needs to be a balance where you've got, you know, business Anthony and you've got, you know, personal Anthony, but you never ever stop really thinking about how to improve, what opportunities there are. You're literally, and this comes with experience and this comes with time, is that everything you see becomes an opportunity.
Yeah.
And you as a business person need to really work out, is it an opportunity for me, or is it something that I'm getting excited about because it's shiny and it's got bells and whistles?
It's cool, it's new.
Or is it something that, you know, is something that's going to help? I mean, the biggest one I think about in in our field was, you know, about 5 years ago, cupcakes became the rage. Everyone was doing cupcakes. And then macaroons came out after, and everyone was doing macaroons.
And now it's cronuts. Everybody's doing cronuts. You know, everyone's
doing these things. And we kind of, we looked at it and we thought, is it something that's here for good? Or is it something that's a fad that's going to do well for a short period of time and then disappear? And we looked at it and we thought, nut fad.
And I guess you know, bread is not a fad. Bread's been around for a long time, thousands of years.
And in fact, the way we make our bread, you know, sourdough has been around for thousands and thousands of years. It's trendy now because you've got chefs like Neil Perry putting sourdough on their menu. And I mean, people today still don't know what sourdough is, but they'll eat it because it's sourdough. Everyone eats sourdough. Why are you eating sourdough?
Yeah,
you know. The other one is the gluten-free stuff. And we were, again, because of family, we were quite passionate in making sure that that was key to what we were doing, and making sure that it was tasty and delicious. But, you know, that's... health requirements don't disappear. They might, you know, become more and more mainstream. You'll see a lot more restaurants now. We've got gluten-free options on their menus. People are asking for gluten-free, you know, in their diets.
What are some of the biggest lessons that you learned? I'm not talking about the business. I'm talking about, what did Anthony learn from the experience?
Look, personally, it's all about getting into a particular headspace. Expectations versus reality of being a small business owner can be quite skewed. Knowing that you're not going to make money to start off with is a great place to start. We weren't really there when we started. We thought we were going to be millionaires.
Yeah.
So that's a big lesson. The other thing is stay true to who you are as you know, and what you want to achieve. You know, do you want to achieve it? Your goal isn't to make money, and that's something that I really find is important. You've got to set goals.
And you've got to have that core passion.
Yeah.
Money as a core passion is not a long-term core passion, and there's no sincerity to it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But money isn't a goal; it's an outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Very true.
Yeah, you make profit because you do something really well.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't do that really well to start with. But it's really set yourself some personal goals. Know your boundaries. Know what you do well and believe that you can. You've really got to keep reinforcing to yourself that I can do this, I can do this. This is what I'm going to achieve. No one can tell me otherwise. And you know what? There's a lot of people in your life who will tell you, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, there was, and they were mainly family. You know, it was mum and dad who saw what we were going through and were like, what are you doing? You know, you've both got university degrees. You know, why are you doing this and putting yourselves through this strife? Just go get a job. But you know, again, they're not doing it to discourage you. They're doing it to really, because they care.
And yeah. They
see what's happening.
And I think they've got as much fear about it as you do. And parents want to see you succeed.
That's right. So they were probably the biggest lessons that I learned. It's perseverance was something you learn. You know, they call it intestinal fortitude, but it's really setting your goals and not allowing you or anything to kind of stop you from achieving that.
What advice do you wish you had before you started? So if somebody had sat you down and said, here's the things that you need to know, what would they have been?
Oh, I think the biggest advice that I wish I was given was be more creative. Think outside the box.
Okay.
You know, don't be mainstream. You know?
Guys, if you know Anthony, that's Anthony's motto.
It is. I mean, when as a 20-year-old, it was you're stuck in that mainstream headspace. You don't know what your peripherals are.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, so it's really open your eyes and see what's out there and be more creative and be more left field, because the way I look at it now is that if you're mainstream, then everyone is mainstream and you're not going to stand out from the crowd. But the minute you do something a little bit left of centre, you've got no competition.
Yeah.
You're the only person doing it, and you're the only person doing it that way. So already you're the market leader because you're the only person, but still you're the leader. And that's kind of, I wish I was given that advice early on, but we learned that through trial and error.
How does the bakery handle lots of other players in the market doing sourdough now and doing gluten-free? That, like, I guess you talk about mainstream, those products have become quite mainstream. You mentioned Neil Perry and that appeal. So how does the bakery manage that, still stay competitive?
We still do our mainstream stuff. You know, you're always going to have a white sourdough on there.
Mm.
You know, you're always going to have a whole grain sourdough.
You need to forgive the pun. You need your bread and butter.
That is your bread and butter. We encourage competition. And one thing I love about competitors is when you see them doing the stuff that you're doing, that's when there's no better compliment than seeing your competitors copy you.
You get a buzz.
Absolutely.
Because they think it's good enough that they should do it too.
That's right. You know you're doing something right. So... there are a lot of competitors, especially in Sydney, in that space.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that you're never going to be out there on your own. So you've got to hang your hat on certain things. Quality for us is important.
Yeah.
It's first and foremost. It's artisan. So, you know, when people say your bread loaves don't look the same as each other, well, absolutely they don't, because they're truly artisan. They're handmade. You know, they're each individual loaf is rolled by hand, so it's going to look a little bit different.
Bread hasn't always been rectangular and a plastic bag and all the same
it's
shape.
It's not in a tin. So if you're making loaves in a tin, then of course they're all going to look the same. But ours, each one is individual. That's kind of how we differentiate. Some of the other things, we've just recently gone through a change in branding,
mm-hmm.
Change in logo, changing our approaches to the way we market our business, change in, you know, social media. We've just brought on a social media manager for the first time in a long time. And that was, you can't have a business today without a social media person.
Absolutely not.
Funnily enough, you know, she's a 19-year-old studying marketing. But you know what? When you're trying to teach guys in their 30s and 40s and 50s about social media... it's hard.
It's a long road.
But you know, it's leveraging off the skills of millennials whose life is revolving around social media, and it's how to use those skills and that knowledge to benefit your business.
Cool. What does the future hold? And by that question, I mean for you and for Shepherd's, because I know you're kind of in a unique position where you're head of academic studies for hospitality and you're involved in Shepherd's. That must be a bit of a balancing act.
You know what? The amazing thing about my life now is that we've done the hard work, so, you know, we can step out of it and take a step back. The business does look after itself.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a team of managers and we've got a team of ops people who run the business now. We've got a team of distributors who run the business now. So, you know, we're lucky. We just kind of sit back and you know, just watch it all happen. Why did I get into education? It seems weird, but I've always had a passion for teaching and kind of sharing knowledge. So I am in a blessed position where I can have my own business and, you know, really influence the lives of people who want to study hospitality, and there's not too many people who can do that.
So what's next for you?
Oh, I don't know. I see a big opportunity for the next bit of food retail. We're opening up little shop fronts around Sydney. We're testing the market in retail.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I think the next best big thing is going to be mobile retail. Mm-hmm. So looking at, you know, the way we think about our customers and the way we get our products to our customers, you know. The food truck movement in the US has been huge for years.
Yeah.
food trucks in Melbourne have been huge for several years, and there's only a handful of businesses that are doing it well. And I think there's a big opportunity for us as shepherds to be moving into that space. You know, mobile bakeries coming into you and selling you fresh bread.
Wow.
You know, that's where we're looking at.
That's a whole new business.
It is a whole new business. So, you know, hopefully you guys see in a couple of years a whole fleet of shepherd's trucks around Sydney. Hopefully our competitors aren't listening to this podcast.
Well, Anthony, thank you so much for your time and telling us about your story and your ups and your downs. Guys, if you are interested in trying some of Shepherd's products, you can go to their website. So it's Shepherd's Artisan Bakehouse. Farmers Markets, that's on the website as well. There's also some storefronts. The ones I know are Castle Towers and Westfield East Gardens. Try the passion fruit Lamington. You can't go wrong. Thank you for your time, Anthony.
Thank you.